Chapter 1. Why don't zebras get ulcers? It's 2 o'clock in the morning and you're lying in bed. You have something immensely important and challenging to do that next day. A critical meeting, a presentation, an exam. You have to get a decent night's rest, but you're still wide awake. You try different strategies for relaxing. Take deep, slow breaths. Try to imagine restful mountain scenery. But instead, you keep thinking that unless you fall asleep in the next minute, your career is finished. Thus, you lie there, more tense by the second. If you do this on a regular basis, somewhere around 2:30, when you're really getting clammy, an entirely new disruptive chain of thought will no doubt intrude. Suddenly, amid all your other worries, you begin to contemplate that nonspecific pain you've been having in your side, that sense of exhaustion lately, that frequent headache. The realization hits you. I'm sick, fatally sick. Oh, why didn't I recognize the symptoms? Why did I have to deny it? Why didn't I go to the doctor? When it's 2:30 on those mornings, I always have a brain tumor. These are very useful for that sort of terror, because you can attribute every conceivable nonspecific symptom to a brain tumor and justify your panic. Perhaps you do, too. Or maybe you lie there thinking that you have cancer, or an ulcer, or that you've just had a stroke. Even though I don't know you, I feel confident in predicting that you don't lie there thinking, I just know it, I have leprosy. True? You are exceedingly unlikely to obsess about getting a serious case of dysentery if it starts pouring. And few of us lie there feeling convinced that our bodies are teeming with intestinal parasites or liver flukes. Of course not. Our nights are not filled with worries about scarlet fever, malaria, or bubonic plague. Cholera doesn't run rampant through our communities. River blindness, black water fever, and elephantiasis are third world exotica. Few female listeners will die in childbirth, and even fewer of those listening to this are likely to be malnourished. Thanks to revolutionary advances in medicine and public health, our patterns of disease have changed, and we are no longer kept awake at night worrying about infectious diseases, except, of course, AIDS or tuberculosis, or the diseases of poor nutrition or hygiene. As a measure of this, consider the leading causes of death in the United States in 1900. Pneumonia, tuberculosis, and influenza. And if you were young, female, and inclined toward risk-taking, childbirth. When is the last time you heard of scads of people dying of the flu? Yet the flu, in 1918 alone, killed many times more people than throughout the course of that most barbaric of conflicts, World War I. Our current patterns of disease would be unrecognizable to our great-grandparents, or, for that matter, to most mammals. Put succinctly, we get different diseases and are likely to die in different ways from most of our ancestors, or for most humans currently living in the less privileged areas of this planet. Our nights are filled with worries about a different class of diseases. We are now living well enough and long enough to slowly fall apart. The diseases that plague us now are ones of slow accumulation of damage. Heart disease, cancer, cerebrovascular disorders. While none of these diseases is particularly pleasant, they certainly mark a big improvement over succumbing at age 20 after a week of sepsis or dengue fever. Along with this relatively recent shift in the patterns of disease have come changes in the way we perceive the disease process. We have come to recognize the vastly complex intertwining of our biology and our emotions, the endless ways in which our personalities, feelings, and thoughts both reflect and influence the events in our bodies. One of the most interesting manifestations of this recognition is understanding that extreme emotional disturbances can adversely affect us. Put in the parlance with which we have grown familiar, stress can make us sick. And a critical shift in medicine has been the recognition that many of the damaging diseases of slow accumulation can be either caused or made far worse by stress. In some respects, this is nothing new. Centuries ago, sensitive clinicians intuitively recognized the role of individual differences in vulnerability to disease.